the many realms of Azeroth to the great dark beyond via the magic of podcasting. This is episode 36 of the Rolling Restart, a World of Warcraft podcast for you, for me, and for my co-host. But before we get into all of that, I need to talk about a little something that, well, let me just be clear here. I recorded this episode a day ago with my co-host this week, who I'm still going to introduce in a second. But there's something that he's involved in that we forgot to plug at the end of the show, and I want to plug in at the beginning of the show before we even get started, because it's that big a deal to me, it's that important, and I think it's a great event. It's the Heroes of the Storm Charity Brawl. Now, I know this is a World of Warcraft podcast, but I think everyone who listens to podcasts for anything, whether it's baseball, Warcraft, Heroes of the Storm, or kite flying, can appreciate raising funds for charity, especially one like the Make-A-Wish Foundation. The Heroes of the Storm Charity Brawl is happening for the third time. It is taking place on June 2nd. I believe it is at 2 p.m. Pacific. I may be slightly off on that. If I am off on that, what you can do is go to heroescharitybrawl.net. That will take you to the page with the fundraiser, which is currently open and accepting donations, and it'll give you more information about who's involved, what's happening, when it's happening, and what is exactly going to be taking place. So once again, go to heroescharitybrawl.net to learn all about that. And now, on with the actual rest of the show. He once told me to stay a while, listen, and I haven't stopped listening. He's one half of Azeroth Roundtable, a third of Core, and a fifth of a damn fine Dungeons & Dragons campaign known as There Will Be Dungeons. He knows David Bowie, he has a statue of Sylvanas, and he knows how to use it. I really have no idea what I meant when I wrote that. It's John Jagger, everyone. Hi, John.
Oh, I knew what it meant. We all knew what it meant. Hi, Ro. Hey, thanks for having me back on the show.
It's always a pleasure to have you on. We are ever so closer to Battle for Azeroth that I just got done listening to you, Ben, and Bell talking on Azeroth Roundtable, and I was expecting a PvP talk, but then it ended up turning into talk about Transmog and Call of Duty on the Battle.net launcher, which I'm very grateful that you guys talked about, because it means we don't have to talk about it here at all.
Well, and let me tell you, when you talk about the Call of Duty thing on the Battle.net launcher, it is a PvP topic, because boy, people have strong opinions about that. I guess including me, even if my strong opinion is it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I actually agree with you. A lot of your sentiments I agreed with quite a bit. So if you guys want to hear talk about that, check out the latest Azeroth Roundtable, everyone. It was a good show. This episode's topic is going to deal with a fair bit of potential spoilers for Battle for Azeroth. So that being said, if you're the kind of person who completely stays away from WoWhead and MMO Champion, and you don't listen to other WoW podcasts because they talk about spoilers, this is definitely not the episode for you. I will not be offended if you do not listen to episode 36 until August after you've leveled a character to 120. That's fine. I think most of you are cool with John and I talking about spoilers, though, so we're going to do that. John, I know you aren't bothered by spoilers when it comes to WoW content. You've said this as much on your show a few times.
No, not typically. I mean, it's funny because there is an element of me that feels a little, you know, I don't know, kind of backwards, because the other thing we always talk about on the show is that we don't go into the beta, we don't go in and play around in the alphas or anything like that, because we want to go in fresh. But the funny thing is when it comes to the story, spoil away. I like to know where we're going. I like to know what to expect. As somebody who, you know, I frequently talked about on this in my show, has a headcanon for their character, I like to be able to prepare that and kind of have that set up as part of, you know, I guess you would call it almost world building and narrative building. But when it comes to the actual gameplay and the quests and all of that, it can be sometimes hard to go through and do the content a second time for an alt. You just notice you're not reading the quest text, or you're just racing, or, oh yeah, I remember I don't like this, and it kills the momentum you have. And I don't like having that part ruined for me. So I guess I'm of two minds, but story spoilers never bother me.
I've been able to have my cake and eat it too by testing when leveling up an alliance character and playing through that stuff so that I keep the horde stuff fresh. And I think obviously I'm going to run into a point where when I'm playing stuff on my Horde characters, I may run into a few moments that feel like they're mirrors of what the other faction's doing. But I'm okay with that as long as those moments don't happen too frequently. All that said, I totally agree with you. But I'm enjoying having my cake and eating it too, being able to test but not necessarily do the stuff that I'm going to be doing when I play it live.
Yeah, that's where I am too, typically.
Well, I want to ask you first off, because I've seen you make some comments both on Twitter and in somewhat podcast-wise, knowing everything that you know right now about the story in Battle for Azeroth, what is your general feeling on the direction it appears we're heading once the game goes live, once the expansion's live?
Okay, so I'm going to quote myself here before we begin and give a bit of a warning to maybe those people who have said, well, I don't mind spoilers, but maybe they didn't come to hear a rage monster or anything like that. I believe that Legion was a fantastic expansion. I've had a wonderful time with this expansion. Even now, I feel like I can pop in at least daily, and there will be, you know, at least something I want to do in the game. I haven't loved the end game for Legion for me personally, but I have always felt like there was something to do. Not once did I log in and just fly in circles around Dalaran or Orgrimmar or anything like that. So Legion has been great. And as a result, I have always said that Battle for Azeroth is Blizzard's chance to lose me, as opposed to feeling like they have to win me over, which is very much how I felt going into Legion. You know, I did not like Warlords of Draenor. In a spectacularly bad moment, I actually asked a pair of Blizzard devs at BlizzCon last year, so did you guys just kind of throw in the towel at the end of that? Which is probably not something they want to hear, but again, they talked about so much content for that game that didn't end up coming out that I don't know how you explain that other than you guys realized that this wasn't working out and decided to pivot to the next thing. Yeah, I mean, remember they were going to have a whole special thing planned for what would go on to be Netherstorm and all of that. And, you know, there was big chunks of that expansion that just never happened. I mean, we got to, you know, two patches basically over the 2-year life cycle of that game. That's crazy. And one of those was the selfie cam. So, you know, take it for what it is. So I was not in a good place going into Legion, and my attitude was very much like, okay, win me back, Blizzard. And they did. They totally did. But now I'm at a place where it's like, okay, keep me. I wanna stay. I had a really great time. Let's see what's next. And I'm trying real hard, bro. I'm trying really hard to continue to give them the benefit of the doubt. But this is perhaps, I don't even want to say the least interested that I've ever been in a story that they've been telling. Because it's not that I'm not interested. It's that I feel like they are actively pushing me away while I'm saying, no, please, we could make this work. We can have a good story. Something good can come of this. Please. And they're just pushing me out the door.
So, really quick question to kind of go alongside that. Do they feel that, and I know you can't necessarily speak for everyone that plays the game, but maybe you've had your ear to the ground and talked with some other people who've shared their opinions and insight on some of the stuff that's been revealed that we're about to go into shortly, but do you feel that they're just pushing you away and that you feel like you may be an outsider on this? Or are you concerned that a fair portion of the player base is going to react poorly to some of the things they're doing?
I think it's going to be a fair number I don't know. At the end of the day, you go off of what the vocal, you know, who knows if it's a majority or minority are saying. What I do know is this. There are people that I know that give Blizzard the benefit of the doubt all the time. They're very level-headed. They aren't like me. They don't speak from their passions. The fiery passion doesn't well up inside them and, you know, ask inappropriate questions at BlizzCon. Like, they keep it muted. They keep it cool. I'm not one of those people, but I know these people, and they have expressed some pretty strong negative reactions to this. I don't mean to throw them under the bus, but I believe when I revealed one of the spoilers to Ben, who is considered the level-headed nice one of the roundtable, he wrote back a bunch of expletives, and basically it was, what the hell are they doing to this game? I mean, I don't want to quit because of the story, but man, was his reaction.
Okay, so now that we have a very interesting reaction point, which element of the story are you referring to? What got Ben to that point?
So I think it's a point where it's not just that it was this one thing. I think this was the culmination of the many things. You know, you have a day where you wake up and you stub your toe. It's fine. Then you can't get your car to start. Okay. Then you're late to work. All right. And your boss yells at you. It's getting pretty bad. And then you leave your cell phone at home or something. And all of a sudden there's a tipping point where it becomes the worst day ever. And maybe, right. And that might not be the worst thing that happened to you that day, but it's the thing that officially tipped it into a bad day. And apparently for Ben in this instance, at least based on his reaction, and again, sorry, Ben, if I'm sharing our text message talk that wasn't meant to be heard. But for this, it was the reveal that Urel has become a incredibly holy zealot and turned good evil. We'll call it lawful good to the extreme.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that, and I am somewhat pleased that that was actually the thing that set him, because I think that's the thing that we're going to end up talking about a fair bit here. And this is something I found out through basically skimming WoWhead, and then I ended up seeing a couple videos, Talies and Nevatel and stuff like that. Essentially, for the Magar Orc allied race questline, in order to unlock Magar Orcs, you return to alternate Draenor from Warlords of Draenor. And one interesting catch about that is when we went to Warlords of Draenor, not only were we going to an alternate universe, we went back in time to essentially what would have been like 30 years before the before current events. So that being the case, when you go to Draenor this time, you're not going to Draenor from the Warlords of Draenor time. You're going to Draenor at the same time as us. Like, the timeline-wise, it's the same point in time, but alternate universe, which means that it's, from Urel's point of view, it's been 30 years since she last saw you. She said to you, if you need us, we'll be here. And she hasn't seen you come back to her for 30 years. And I'm going to get to that point in just a sec. I'm a little annoyed about that. But so 30 years have passed for the Magar Orcs, and things have turned and twisted, because apparently, because there's no Legion around, the Draenei are actually trying to basically go on this crusade and trying to turn the orcs to follow the light, because the light is right, the light is the right way and stuff, and they actually succeed. Like, some orcs become thralls of the Draenei light army. They're called lightbound orcs, and Urel's the one leading this thing now. There's so many reasons, and I'm usually, like I said, you know, a moment ago, I'm one of the relatively neutral and sensible people that's, like, fine about this stuff, but this kind of offends me, too. And there are a couple reasons, and I'm going to give them briefly, and because, John, you do a far better job at expanding on points than I do. My reasons for not liking this is because I feel that it's cheap. It's not earned. Yes, we understand because of the timeline and stuff like that, this is 30 years later. But I didn't get to see those moments that changed Yrel and made her go from who she was when I saw her in Warlords of Draenor to who she is later. While that can work in TV shows and that can work in movies because they usually do flashback episodes and you get to see that stuff, I don't think that kind of plot device works in my MMO, plain and simple. I also feel that using Yrel as the character was unnecessary, as the leader is unnecessary, because they could have done that with any other Draenei character, whether it was one we knew about in Warlords of Draenor or not, and they could have pulled the same impact and the same narrative effect, which is that, oh, hey, the Draenei from there are now kind of the bad guys because they're imposing the light on the orcs. Yrel didn't have to be the leader for that message to still be carried across and for that shock value to still be carried over. I think it just does a disservice to the character that we got to experience in Warlords of Draenor, which in many ways for a lot of people was one of the few good things about that expansion. That's pretty much my rant, and I know you can expand on it so much more.
Yeah, I think for me the big thing is that the idea of the light as an antagonist is a cool idea that they set up in Legion with the cinematic where, you know, Illidan tries to get taken by the light. And I like the idea a lot. I like the duality that they're playing with of the light is not always good and the void is not always bad. I think that's a cool story to tell and to explore. And I actually am a little different than you. I actually feel that the nature of going back to Draenor at 30 years in the future and finding out that the Draenei have started to enslave the orcs and you get the kind of alternate bizarro world outcome of what actually transpired back in our home is a cool idea too. And I would even be on board with Yrel being the leader of these if it wasn't the story that Blizzard always tells. And this is where my major problem comes in with it, is that Blizzard has kind of begun to run into a character problem. They've become extremely willing to kill off characters, which is, you know, depending on how you feel about the seriousness of the storytelling in World of Warcraft, either a good or bad thing. We're running out of villains in a big way. I mean, there's one obvious major baddie still lurking around in Azeroth, but we're at a point where each new expansion, the question of who are we fighting becomes suddenly more and more relevant. And I think that that's a part of why this expansion is so heavily focused on Horde versus Alliance, because at the end of the day, we are beginning to run out of classic bad guys. And we're going to have to create new ones. We're going to have to make new enemies and things like that. So they are at a point where they need to start building on that. But when you look at Warlords of Draenor, they took a character in Marad and had him go through the portal with us to their world. And during Warlords of Draenor, Marad dies. And the trade-off to that, to some degree, is that we were going to get Yrel. She kind of filled in for that role. She kind of became the Holy Draenei Paladin. And what was really cool about Yrel is she was a character that was liked by both Horde and Alliance players. You know, obviously, I'm, say, 98% Horde in my thoughts and opinions. And even I really liked Yrel, and I thought her story was incredibly satisfying. And I've said many times I wish she could have come back through the portal with us. It would have been a little weird for her to be like, hey, peace out, I got to go with these guys. But I feel like that would have been a good character trade. You know, you go from Marad, a character who was in a cinematic, who was basically a named paladin that we knew, and he was given a voice every now and then, for a character that ended up being a little bit more fleshed out and interesting. But the problem is they've decided to leave Yrel behind, and when we do finally get a revisit from her, she's been corrupted by the light. Which, look, I am a white dude. Ro is a white dude. we are not going to be the voice of diversity on this show.
We are also male, last I checked. So we're probably not, in terms of demographics and stuff like that, we may not be the best people to discuss, you know, issues of representation and all that. But I would also like to think, John, that you and I are conscious of those issues and aware that they exist.
Exactly. And so while I'm not necessarily a great spokesperson for such things, I can tell you my own personal thought. And my own personal thought is Blizzard needs to stop telling stories where female characters get power and become corrupted and evil from them, considering it is the story they have told with Jaina. It is the story they've told with Sylvanas. It's the story they're now telling with Yorel. If you go into other properties, it's the story they told with Kerrigan. It's the story they told with Leia. It's the story they told with Leia's mother, Adria, in Diablo. They do it all the time. And while there is difference in nuance into each one of these circumstances, almost every time it is this concept of a very powerful female character decides to act in a manner that seems different than what their character has been shown to be, or becomes corrupted by an outside influence and all of a sudden shifts their alignment to a different one. And I am a self-professed Sylvanas apologist, but even I have to say they've made that character into a villain. She wasn't always. I don't think she's supposed to be, depending on which stage of the game we're looking at her at, but they have made that character into a villain. My biggest issue is she wasn't always.
Right. And the interesting thing with Sylvanas, and I imagine we're going to go into this a bit now, is Sylvanas is kind of a weird case because there were elements of the way Sylvanas was developing as War Chief based on some things shown in Battle for Azeroth, Beta, and just during the time with Legion and everything like that. There were parts where I felt like, you know what, they were actually not taking her down the villain direction. It looked like they were giving her promise to, like, you know, put the... They were thinking about the Horde and stuff and having her think about doing what was right for the Horde, doing what was right for her people. Some events have been made aware, things have been happening. And have you checked out the preview of the book for Before the Storm yet?
Yeah. I think so.
Okay. These are spoilers for the Before the Storm novel now that we're getting into, so just so you're clear, but there is at one point, and I'm not going to give all the context for it, but there is one point in which Sylvanas takes out a sizable portion of her own Forsaken. When I learned that, that made me incredibly sad because, and while she gives the, while there is an explanation given for why she does it, because she feels that them having hope is a dangerous thing, it becomes far more difficult to think of Sylvanas as a heroic type of character, even one who may have a different perspective because she's Horde and not Alliance. It is becoming more and more difficult to go with Sylvanas as being like, yeah, you know, she's my war chief. And that is kind of an effed up thing for me to say, considering that I changed my warlock to a Forsaken character. I'm now slightly beginning to regret that decision.
Well, I mean, I think to me, the issue is this. If you want to make Sylvanas a villain, go ahead. I disagree to a pretty significant extent with that call. I think if you look at her origins in Warcraft 3, she was very clearly painted to be a hero in that, a tragic hero. I think moving into World of Warcraft, her role has been anti-villain, villain, anti-hero, villain, anti-hero, villain, depending on the expansion. There are times where her motives are explained and it makes perfect sense. There are other times where they seem to just be going with, because she's evil. And like you said, her turning on her own people is also exceptionally counter to her character. Because to me, when you look at the bad things she's done, it has always been in the service of her people. And so for her to suddenly turn on them is probably the most out of character act that they could do, because everything, even the bad stuff, you know, if you say like, well, look at what she did to Gilneas. Well, the attack on Gilneas and all of that was simply because Garrosh ordered her to, and she accepted the fact that, look, if an undead dies, there's no one to replace them. We are a finite resource that every death is permanent now. And we need to find a solution to that. That's been her sole motivation. So to sell me on the idea that she willingly cut some of that off seems crazy to me. But let's for a moment say, okay, Blizzard has made up their minds. Sylvanas is not going to be the war chief the Loa spirits told Vol'jin she would be. And she's going to be a villain. I'm fine. I'm fine with that. Okay. Well, either way, I'm fine with that. I can live with that. You've made a decision, run with it. My problem is, and I've said this before, is that we have been dealing with who is the right war chief for the Horde since the pre-Wrath of the Lich King event, when they had Thrall and Garrosh duel over the mantle for the first time. That's how long we've been dealing with who should be war chief of the Horde. And while Blizzard is sitting there telling us over and over again, this is the start to a story, we're working towards something, you need to give us the benefit of the doubt, you need to give us time to tell the story we want to tell, okay, but it's been a really long time.
Just looked it up, it's almost been 10 years since that event happened.
That's insane! And granted, it hasn't always been that, you know, the same level as losing a war chief every expansion. But I mean, that was the start of Garrosh might be the leader of the Horde. And then after that expansion, it did become Garrosh was the leader of the Horde. Then it became deposing Garrosh. Then it became Vol'jin and he didn't do anything. And now it became Sylvanas. And now will we keep her or will we lose her? Well, if she's a villain, we're probably not going to keep her. So who's going to take over after that? And I am not going to be satisfied for a 12 to 14 year buildup so they could put Sourfang as the war chief, you know, or whatever they ultimately decide to do. It's going to be incredibly unsatisfying. I just want to go back to a point where I can be proud of my faction, which I haven't felt that way about since basically Wrath of the Lich King.
What is it that made you lose that faction pride in Wrath of the Lich King? Just out of curiosity, when did you lose that?
I think for me, it wasn't even Wrathgate. It to me became so incredibly obvious that they wanted to put Garrosh in charge. That became the clear story going into Wrath. And as I saw more and we went through it, it was one of those things where I could see the writing on the wall. And I did not like Garrosh as a character. I didn't want to see that happen. And we went through it and then it happened. And I never liked him, even in the early Cataclysm days where they were trying to paint him as maybe a good war chief. I didn't like Garrosh, and so I wanted nothing to do with the Horde. And yeah, there was the whole Wrathgate stuff, which I also didn't like, but at least at the end of Wrathgate, you had that cool showdown between Thrall and Varian, and it was like, oh man, this is going to be good. And it just didn't pay off, because at the end of the day, we knew exactly where it was going to go, which was they were going to put the hothead Garrosh in charge of the Horde, and it was just going to turn into Horde versus Alliance all the time again. And that's pretty much exactly what happened. So I haven't really been proud of my faction since then, at least not in any big overt way. My story has always run separate. It started to come back when we were, you know, uniting to fight Garrosh, because it felt like, okay, we're finally doing this. And we get Vol'jin, which, you know, he was a solid choice. And then we lost him at the start of the next expansion.
Yeah, and for you those that say, well, aren't you proud of your faction during Legion? Well, there was no faction stuff happening during Legion. It was all about the class groups having to do the job because the Alliance and Horde failed.
I think the biggest swell of pride for my faction, you know, during the Wrathgate cinematic, there's the moment where you hear the horn and you hear, you know, the for the Horde, and in complete unison, you hear everybody yell for the Horde. And like, that was such a cool moment to me, because the Alliance part of it was kind of how I view the Alliance. You know, here's a group of people banded together. They're all shouting, you know, for wherever we're from. You know, they just name the various places. And it's that idea of here's a bunch of independent groups that have all now come together against a common enemy. Whereas the Horde was this one voice. It's the same thing. It's a bunch of different groups, but they all speak for the one unified voice. And that was a really powerful moment for me, because it was like, yeah, that's the Horde. That's what it is. It's this unified together. You know, we're the outcasts, we're the underdogs, and we're all in this together. And that cutscene ends that, and it didn't come back again until the Sylvanas for the Horde moment in the Battle for Azeroth trailer, which was an amazing moment and felt great and actually sold me on this conflict, until the spoilers started coming through and I realized, oh, I'm not interested in it.
I just thought of an odd parallel for what I would like the Horde to be like when put side by side with what the Alliance is. If you've not seen the movie Black Panther, then this is going to be lost on you. And you'll have to pardon me, because it's been some time since I've seen Black Panther, so I forget some names here. But the tribe that lived on the outskirts of Wakanda, in the mountains and stuff like that, basically the outcast tribe that didn't really associate in the affairs of all the other tribes that lived in Wakanda.
Right.
To me, that's like what the Horde should have been like, or what the Horde should be like. They're not evil. They have a different set of ways. They have a different way of going about things. They don't believe in all the technology and the structure that the other tribes have. But at the end of the day, they're not evil. If there was a common enemy that had to be faced, then they would join in and do what they had to do. But they have their own identity. And I feel like they get... That's kind of what I would like the Horde to be. I don't want Alliance versus Horde to be good versus evil. And the people on the dev team and writers and stuff had said there's good and evil in both the Alliance and the Horde. And there are examples of that. And I agree with that to a point. But it's... I challenge you to say that it is 50-50 when it comes to good evil representation in the factions. When it comes to the Horde, yes. Are there good characters in the Horde? Yes, but they come across being portrayed as mostly evil. When you look at the Alliance, are there unsavory slash evil people in the Alliance? Yes, but they come across and are portrayed narratively as mostly good.
Yeah, I mean, when there's good people on the Horde, it's usually honor. It's, you know, they're an honorable person. And therefore, because they have honor, that makes them better than somebody who doesn't have honor.
Hello, somebody.
Yeah, exactly. When somebody's evil on the Alliance, it's typically because, oh, they're tragic. You know, they're misguided. The Horde did something awful to them. Therefore, their evil activities are still evil, but they're justified, right? You know, like that. It always feels like you have to go back to that drawing that parallel. And I think that's what is such a disappointment, because the opening to Legion was such a perfect moment for dividing the factions. It was a moment where the Horde felt completely justified in their actions. The Alliance felt completely justified in their actions. There were genuine stakes that were lost. And rather than ride that, they have instead decided to come up with this story of burning down the Night Elves tree for reasons.
Oddly enough, I'm actually okay with both the burning of Teldrassil and the sacking of Lordaeron. My quick nutshell answer to that is, big changes like that, that have a permanent lasting impact on the world, excite me, because they're changes that are hard to be ignored, and they're actually representing that stuff in game, and I applaud that. From a narrative point of view, yeah, it's kind of meh, but I like that they're willing to take bigger risks.
I'm all about it. I just think it was done in the wrong order. I think you can tell a story where the Alliance, especially characters like Greymane and Anduin, who would have lived there for a time, I think. Maybe it was just Varian who lived there for a time. But anyway, I think in a world where these characters may feel they have a legitimate claim over Lordaeron and want to see Sylvanas kicked out and the undead kicked out and that retaken as a human kingdom, that is a stance that I can understand that doesn't feel evil. Like, if it actually makes a good deal of sense to me. And if that is what had happened first, if that had been what kicked off this whole thing, all of a sudden you have Sylvanas feeling very threatened. And when she gets threatened, she responds in big ways. Her then saying, we need to make sure that Azerite can't be shipped and help the Alliance, we're going to go take Teldrassil. I'm totally fine with that all of a sudden. But it's where she just randomly decides that war must be coming, and therefore she must act, that seems absolutely out of the blue. And again, if you're trying to tell me a story where she's evil and starting the war, then it's fine. It makes perfect sense. The problem is the Blizz devs and everybody are out there going, oh no, it's good and bad on both sides. You shouldn't hate your faction. But then all you do is make me hate my faction.
And from a world perspective point of view, I totally agree with you on these points. One of the things that also doesn't feel right to me about Teldrassil being burned first, and the motivation for doing it, because, you know, to stop Azerite, you know, stop the Alliance from being able to transport Azerite and all that stuff. A couple of things kind of break down that logic. One, you have mages. Mages can open portals. Having the whole concept of naval routes and stuff be important, it is kind of a weak excuse to me. If you're going to use that as an excuse, and you look at the geography of everything, when movements are made in a war between two factions and stuff like that, and territory is important, and routes of supply and stuff are important and all that stuff, I want it to make sense from a geography point of view. And from a geography point of view, burning Teldrassil, which is in, from our perspective, the far northwest of Kalimdor, which is basically as far away from the Eastern Kingdoms as you can practically get in the world map, it makes no sense to me to burn that place down because of its strategic value for helping to get Azerite to the Eastern Kingdoms. That's where it loses me, is why go there first? There are far better places you would want to strike and take down first. For instance, I would say if you're going to go attack something like Teldrassil, why not Stormwind first? Stormwind seems like the most obvious place to go to first, and you may say, oh, well, they're more heavily fortified than Teldrassil. Teldrassil's a fucking... Wow, pardon my French. But Teldrassil is a great big freaking tree powered by night elves and magic and stuff like that, I consider that more isolated and fortified than Stormwind. I think Stormwind would have been just as easy a target. Logic and stuff is important to me. Teldrassil doesn't make sense as a logical target in warfare.
I think you've nailed it for me, though, because, like, I can get into the minutiae and into the weeds, and, you know, you have to make your own logic leaps, like you said, especially in a world with mages and portals and things like that, where sometimes they can use that, sometimes they can't. Sometimes it's a story element, sometimes
it's not. Sometimes you go back
in
time to an alternate universe, but, oh, you can open a portal back, no problem.
Yeah, but you should totally stay and help them because you care. It's one of those things where they're asking us to make a weird logic leap. They've asked us to do it in the past. But the problem here is just that I so don't care about Alliance versus Horde anymore. Like, none of it is interesting or compelling to me. And I know there are a lot of people out there that are like, oh, I'm an old school Warcraft person. Orcs versus humans. That's what I want. And I'm not there with you anymore. Like, those things did exist. It's an evolving story, and it feels like we should be so far past it. And I just, as I read more and more quest text that comes out of this game, it's not even the big revelations that have bothered me the most. It's things like characters telling my player character, oh, good, you've got a taste for war and you like it. Well, no, my character actually doesn't. That's not my character at all. You are making weird assumptions with your lore and your narrative and my characters. And yeah, WoW has become such a curated experience, and it just doesn't feel like a role-playing game anymore as a result of it, because it's just buckle up. Here's how you feel. And that's, I think, to me, my biggest issue has been lately, even in Legion. Legion was a great expansion, I already said, but it was because of, you know, the enjoyable content, the focus on a conflict that made sense, all of that. My character was acting in a way that made sense for my character, but now we are in a different boat. Now my character's not doing what my character would do. And that suddenly becomes a very big disconnect for me. So to kind of bring it full circle to answer your question, I'm exceptionally concerned about the narrative. I'm concerned because it's the most important part of the game to me, and it's the part that I'm going into this expansion the least excited for.
That being said, you brought up an interesting thing in which you said you no longer care about Alliance versus Horde anymore. So I'm going to pose this question to you. What do you care about? What do you want to see? What do you hope we'll get to see, whether it's in the latter parts of Battle for Azeroth or maybe even further down the line in Warcraft lore? If this is the direction you don't want things to go, then for you, what is the right direction?
I mean, I think for me, the ultimate, you know, idea was that we would go after the old gods next. You know, that seemed like the logical next step. It seemed to be, sure, but I think it's much in the same way that through Pandaria, they kept talking about the Legion, and then we all got sidetracked and went to an alternate reality, Draenor, and then we had the Legion. I feel like we're in the same boat here. Like, there's going to be references, but at the end of the day, I think Old Gods become a next expansion thing. And every time I have ever felt like, well, I'm excited for the next expansion, it's been a bad thing, because World of Warcraft, for me at least, very much suffers from Star Trek movie syndrome, although reversed. I think the only one that breaks the mold is Burning Crusade, which was good at the time, although I will say retrospectively is content I would prefer to skip. But you have Vanilla, which was what it needed to be. It was great. It was your introduction and all of that. Burning Crusade, like I said, a good, solid expansion. Wrath of the Lich King, probably one of my favorites, if not my favorite. But then you start to get into the every other expansion category. Cataclysm, didn't like it. Then Pandaria, one of my favorites. Then Warlords of Draenor, didn't like it. Legion, one of my favorites. And now we're going into Battle for Azeroth, and I'm in the same place I was at the end of Pandaria and at the end of Lich King, where it's, I don't know if I'm excited about the next expansion, but I think I'm excited about the one after it.
I don't know if I necessarily feel that way entirely just yet. I don't think that Battle for Azeroth is necessarily going to be another Warlords of Draenor. Partially because I think Warlords of Draenor was, in terms of gameplay and features and stuff, a failure on a lot of levels. But in terms of story, the leveling story was good, and the story kind of fell apart in the endgame there. This is one where I feel like the leveling is going to be just as strong as Legion, just as strong as Warlords. I have no doubts about the leveling story, especially based on what I've seen playing through Alliance leveling, which I'm not done with. But it's been good. It's been pretty solid. And there's a few interesting things that pop up on the Alliance side of things to come. My concerns are, I'm actually hoping that the Battle for Azeroth is not going to be as Horde versus Alliance as we think it is. I'm really hoping that this does end up being the Old God expansion, and I'm remaining hopeful that this is the Old God expansion. I'm remaining hopeful that N'Zoth is the final boss, which seems weird for me to say, because that's what everyone's assuming, that, well, obviously they're painting it that way. Well, I'm kind of hoping it does go that way, because this Horde versus Alliance thing, it's an interesting change, and it's kind of a fresh thing in a way as far as like how extreme they're willing to do it, and I like that they're taking big risks, and I like that they're changing, you know, landscapes and stuff like that. But I have to agree with you, John. I feel like, in terms of the world, in terms of a lot of the characters that have been involved in fighting off cataclysmic threats, pun intended, time and time and time again, I think, as a world, while there may be differences and rivalries between groups of people and certain individuals, I think as a world, as Azerothians, you get to a point eventually where you realize that red versus blue is so unimportant compared to the big picture.
Yeah, and I think they've just had a lot of expansions to convince us of that. And maybe they didn't convince everybody, but they convinced me. You know, I've been playing since the beginning, and the message has been loud and clear in each expansion. We need to work together. And now all of a sudden they're saying, don't work together. And I'm sitting here scratching my head going, but you said that we should. And I am, you know, not the fastest learner in the world, but it took, after this many expansions, it took. And here we are. And I think that's been the major sticking point for me. I mean, if you want to get down to it, there are certainly other concerns. If you look at the things that I liked from Legion, almost everything I liked in Legion has been cut for Battle for Azeroth and replaced by things that don't necessarily sound good. The stuff that's carrying over is stuff that I did not participate in or didn't care about, like Mythic Dungeons. I'm done with raiding. I'm no longer at a point in my life where I'm interested in scheduling time to go through and do raids. That's just not for me.
You, Ben, and I are doing island expeditions. I've decided it now. Even if it only ends up being one or two nights, you need to try them at least.
I'm intrigued. Like, the war fronts and the islands seem compelling. I don't want to make it sound like I think that nothing good is coming in this new expansion. They're compelling, but I haven't been sold on them yet. Mm-hmm. And same thing with the Azerite. I mean, this story seems to revolve so heavily around the nature of Azerite, and to me, they might as well have called it MacGuffin. Like, I don't see... They never showed me the potential of it. They showed a lot of characters' eyes get wide and go, ooh, Azerite. But as a outside observer, I don't see it. And so the need to go to war over it has not been sold to me yet.
I have a bit of feedback and a bit of a complaint about that very point, actually. Have you done any bit of questing on the beta? Like, have you done enough questing on the beta where you've completed what you would call, like, a chapter or a storyline?
No.
Okay. Well, then, I'm going to explain something, and you may not be too happy about it.
Great.
So, one of the kind of patterns I see when you're doing questing in the content in Battle for Azeroth is, and like all the leveling zone content and stuff, you have different chapters, kind of like smaller stories being told within a bigger one, and your achievement progress kind of shows what chapters you've completed and stuff. Something that happens at the end of every chapter, you know, some sort of pivotal climactic quest where, you know, some really cool things happen, is that your quest reward is always some significant piece of Azerite. The acquisition of Azerite, and it's funny but I say this because, yes, Azerite's important because it's tied into the whole leveling system with, like, the necklace and the Azerite gear and all that stuff. I guess here's one of the things I have to say about just Azerite in general as a device and a game mechanic and stuff like that. It's like, as far as a game mechanic, instead of Azerite, you know, it's like power for your artifacts and stuff like that. That's cool and all. But you come across Azerite so commonly, so frequently during your experiences in Battle for Azeroth that it loses its importance, or it loses it. I don't know, it just doesn't feel as important to me or as precious when you're finding it every Tom, Dick, and Harry is handing it to you. That's my thing.
Right. No, that makes perfect sense. I mean, that's, to me, Azerite is artifact power. That's how it's in my mind. Mm-hmm. And so I try to put myself in a position where every time someone says Azerite, in my head I hear artifact power.
Yeah.
And it just seems ridiculous to me. It's like, oh, we gotta go to war because we can't let the Alliance get all the artifact power. Like, that's what I hear in my head when they talk about it.
Silithus is full of artifact power, John.
Right. We gotta go mine artifact power. Shut up. I don't need it that bad. It's the lamest reward from my daily quests, even over gear that I'm going to just sell for gold. Like, I just don't care about it that much, and I'm sure I'm going to feel the same way about Azerite. But let me ask you something, because here's one of the sticking points for me. You've spent more time in the alpha and the beta than I did questing. Does Azerite gear make sense to you? Because I made a prediction early on that Azerite gear would not make it to the live game. It's pretty clear at this stage I'm wrong. It's going to be in there. But the basis for my prediction was they wouldn't do it because nobody had been able to explain it in a way that made it seem like a good system to me.
So the simplest way I can explain Azerite gear is it's essentially, when it comes to head, shoulders, and chest pieces, each of those kinds of pieces of equipment, if it's a piece of Azerite gear, it's like it has its own mini talent tree. That's what it comes down to. Not all pieces have it, just some. Just those three slots, and not every head piece, not every shoulder piece is going to be an Azerite piece. Only certain ones are. The more interesting choices and decisions come at the earlier levels, I feel, than the later levels. It's like for all the pieces, the last thing you unlock is usually just boosting the item's item level, which feels boring. The more exciting choices tend to often be made on the first or second tier. And with the first tier, more often than not, there'll be, like, each spec will have, you can either choose to have the gear give a bonus to one of your specs, or choose to have the gear give you a unique bonus that feels like it's special or unique to that particular item. And 9 times out of 10, I don't go for the bonus to the spec, I go for the bonus to that feels unique, because it seems unique and cool. It's like the trinket bone. It's like the bonuses from legendary gear and stuff like that. It's like, do I want my Chaos Bolt crits to be 5% more, or do I want my shoulders to sometimes spawn globes of water or occasionally globes of darkness that when I walk over them, they give me a boost and it kind of changes up my gameplay? Which one sounds more fun? To me, the second one does, because it feels like it's a bit more engaging and fun rather than just a flat 10% boost to your Chaos Bolt. So, my opinions on Azerite gear are, it's not overly complex. There's some kind of neat fun things about it, but I haven't seen everything yet, and I haven't done any raid testing. The Azerite gear from raiding is supposed to have better bonuses or more significant bonuses than the stuff you get while questing, so I can't give a complete verdict on it because I haven't seen everything from it yet. But so far, I'd say it's not going to be tossed because it's overly complicated. It's basically, like I said, Azerite gear has many talent trees, is what it boils down to.
All right. Well, I don't care. I thought about it, wanted to care. I will say this. I agree with you. I would also be the person who takes the cool thing over the stat increase. But then I also look at the raiders and it's like, well, okay, but when you get the raid gear, aren't you going to min-max at that point because that's what raiding is?
But that's why you raid with a team like Furt, who doesn't give a crap about what's better and goes with what's fun. So for me, I'm Azerite gear is fine because I'm going to go for all the cool knick-knack bonuses, and I'm not going to care about the bonus that's going to give me the absolute highest DPS. I'm going to choose the bonuses that I feel provide more fun and engaging gameplay to me. Now, is that going to be a bit more frustrating for Mythic Raiders? Yeah, probably. The Mythic Raiders may have their own opinions on Azerite gear and the bonuses that come with it, but for me, the fun, I appreciate that those fun bonuses are on the Azerite gear, because if those bonuses didn't exist on them, I would be completely uninterested in the system.
Sure. I'd be the same way. If it was choose 5% bonus to this or 5% bonus to this, I would call that system a complete waste of time. So as of right now, it's only half a waste of time. And I think my biggest issue is, as you're describing it to me, I'm sitting here thinking like, oh, it's like the gearing system in Destiny, but half-assed. And I think that's been kind of my problem with a lot of decisions WoW has been making lately, is they take with these weird but kind of cool concepts from other games, and then they say like, well, let's do it, but let's not go all in on it, because that would be like a whole game and crazy. Let's just half-ass it, and then we're good. They did that with legendaries for Legion, where it was, oh, legendaries are a really cool thing in Diablo, and it's kind of the thing that makes Diablo amazing and replayable and so cool. What if we did that in our game, but what if we kind of just half-assed it instead of really... Yeah, what if instead of making it to where there are a bunch of different builds for a bunch of different classes and cool ways to augment your character and break your character in fun, exciting ways, what if you just get two of them and it's powerful, but it's also a pain in the butt to get, and the way you would have to replay the game isn't as intuitive as Diablo's, and there's really not a whole lot of them, and they're rare, and it's not nearly as good. Again, half-assed. And now I hear the Azerite system, and I think of all the gear in Destiny 2, where it's very similar. It's like, okay, you get this gear, and you can usually pick between a couple perks on each piece of your gear. Do you want your grenades to do X, or do you want your grenades to do Y? And, oh, I play in this way, so I'm going to pick this. And that's a really cool, fun way to take gear that's suddenly relevant, or maybe only quasi-relevant to you, and make it to where it kind of fits around your kit, or you play a different way because of the gear you've gotten, which is a concept I love and an idea I love in WoW. But then they're like, okay, well, let's just make it these slots, and let's make sure that half of it is just kind of like upgrades. That way, if people don't like the thing, they don't have to do the thing. They can just take a stat upgrade and make it a stat stick until they move on to something else, and maybe it'll be something they like. And it kind of takes a cool system and removes all the teeth from it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It's funny. I appreciate the extra risks that Blizzard is taking with the storyline and stuff like that. I wish they would take more risk with their gear, especially considering how long in the tooth this game is. The whole legendary system in Legion was it was a fun step forward, and I almost feel like we're taking half a step back with Azerite gear, because again, it's being limited to just three slots, and they're having a bit of control on like what are the bonuses and what do they do. I'm hoping that the bonuses and stuff that I've seen from the questing gear, I'm hoping that the raid tier stuff has even more interesting stuff to choose from. But at the same time, I feel like in general, the dev team should not be afraid to take bigger risks with what gear does and what kind of bonuses it provides. And if they're concerned about I'm trying to think of the right word, but if they're concerned about the sanctity of mythic raiding and the race for world first and all that stuff, because they don't want to come up with gear and bonuses that are too broken or something that encourages people to grind for hours and hours and hours to get the stuff, I think they may be worrying too much. At some point, people want to do stupid, silly, broken stuff. It's one reason that I played Diablo 3 as long as I did, because of some of the wacky builds that you could put together. I'd like to see a bit more of that magic in WoW. Sometimes I think they could afford to not be as tight on balancing as they are. And it's funny I say that, because I used to feel quite the opposite several years ago, but that is just a sign of the times. I've gotten to a point to the game where WoW isn't my one and only love when it comes to gaming. I play a variety of games, so if I'm going to spend less time in WoW, but still staying engaged in WoW on a frequent basis, I want my time to be more meaningful, and I want to have more fun. And for me, more fun would be doing wackier, bigger, crazier stuff. So balance isn't as important to me anymore there.
Yeah, I was playing the other day, and I got in a fight with an abomination. And I'm like, as I'm fighting it, I'm realizing I'm moving back and forth a lot, because the Heroes of the Storm player brain has kicked in, and I'm getting ready to dodge the hook that I know is going to come out any minute and grab me. And all of a sudden I realized what I was doing, and I was like, oh, wait a minute. If this thing even throws a hook, which it didn't, there isn't dodging in it. There's no dodging the hook. They have gotten better at putting in abilities that you can physically dodge in WoW, but generally speaking, most people stand in them because it's not all the time. It's kind of just occasional, and the game isn't typically punishing in a way that requires such a thing. So most of the time you just stand there and hit things. And it was this kind of disappointing moment for me where I was like, man, I think I was having more fun when I thought I had to dodge a hook that was never going to come.
I remember fighting the abominations with hooks in Wrath of the Lich King. Most annoying part of leveling in Wrath of the Lich King.
Yeah, but what if you could dodge them?
I'd be okay with it. If you could actually dodge those, I'd be okay with it. But yeah, when something like that happens and there's really nothing much you can do about it but just accept that this is how that mob works, then yeah. Like, there are certain mobs that CC all the time or silence all the time, and because Blizzard, because the dev team, it has to be so careful on crowd control and interrupt mechanics, your opportunities to interrupt stuff that that enemy NPCs do are limited. So yeah, it's that's one thing they need to address too. You know, and that's kind of part of a bigger problem because of how much PvE and PvP seem to be tied and important to each other, even as much as they try to separate it with different talent trees and stuff. But oh my gosh, this could go into a whole other conversation for another episode.
It really could. I think the reason I bring that up is just to, and to kind of maybe put a bow on it, is I agree. I think, to me, I look at WoW and I see them, and I'm with you. It's like, I want them to take risks. I don't want them, if the dev team feels passionate about how loot works in Destiny, then I want them to embrace it and go for it. And if they fail spectacularly, then I want them to change it for the next expansion. But I would rather see them just really go for it and fail, which, by the way, before people say, well, what if that's what they're doing with the story? I will still complain. I'm not promising to not voice my opinion if they fail. I'm simply saying that I would like them to just go for it and fail. Then have them play it safe and dip one toe into the pool and say, well, we kind of want to try this, but we're not sure how it's going to go. So we're going to just give this a go and see what happens. I mean, garrisons are awful. I still get upset when I have to teleport back to my garrison for whatever reason. It has come up a couple times.
Are you ready for this? Mission tables in Battle for Azeroth tell more story now.
Great. And but at least they went for it with garrisons. I'm glad that they tried it and said no. I will still say that I think we did multiple shows about player housing that would have been a much better version of garrisons if they had existed in that form. I don't think they made the thing the players wanted. I think they made the thing that they wanted. And I think that was the issue with them. But they went for it. And there's a part of me that appreciates that they went for it. There are other things in this game that I don't feel like they've fully tried for. And I like Blizzard when they're at their riskiest instead of when they're at their most cautious, even if it blows up in their face.
My final thing I'll say to all of that is, what if the creative team for World of Warcraft takes a really huge, big risk with the story and gives us a heroic female character that doesn't end up being corrupted over the course of several expansions?
Oh my gosh, it's impossible. It can't be done. It can't be done.
John, thank you for being on for this episode. It's always fun to talk to you. I just love talking to you about stories and just writing character development and all that stuff. There are so many points that you have about this stuff that I pretty much echo with, and you always put it so much better than I could. You do that not only here, but in a number of other places as well, primarily on Azeroth Roundtable. How can people find you and everything that you do?
Well, the best place is to follow me on Twitter. I'm less opinionated and more likely to just tell you about a weird thing that happened during lunch or something. @John_Jagger is where to find me there. It's also how you can contact me to say, John, you are so wrong. That's fine too. I probably won't block you, depending on how nicely you put that. But if you want to check me out in podcast form, you can listen to me talk about World of Warcraft on Azeroth Roundtable. You can hear me talk about Heroes of the Storm on Core. You can hear me talk about Dungeons and Dragons, but in talking about it, I mean playing it on There Will Be Dungeons, and that's the best place to find me.
Awesome, folks. You can find me on Twitter @Rowow. That's R-H-O-W-O-W. You can find the show on Twitter @RestartCast. And, of course, you can send any feedback emails you have to restartcast@gmail.com. It's been a while from our last episode, and it's going to be a couple months till our next one. I think we'll still be just a couple weeks shy of the launch of Battle for Azeroth. No idea what we'll be talking about, but I'm sure we'll make someone angry about it, John.
I have no doubt on that. It's what I come on here to do. Some people come on here to be friendly and laugh and joke, and I try to do those things, but Ro likes to have me on whenever he knows I'm fired up. So I guess what I'm saying is blame Ro, because he doesn't knock when I'm in a good mood. He waits until I gripe on Twitter, and then he's like, John, come on the show, it's time.
I like people who make sense when they're angry rather than people who are irrationally angry. And it's one thing I appreciate you about you being on the show is that when you have something to say, you have a good reason for it.
Typically. Although I will say I've been wrong before and I shall be wrong again, and I will gladly admit it if and when I am.
Well, until the next time that John is wrong, I've been Ro, he's been John. And we now return you to your regularly scheduled adventures in Azeroth. Goodbye, everybody. The hype for BlizzCon 2018 has begun, and so has our planning for this year's Con Before the Storm.
Con Before the Storm will bring together fans and content creators for all of Blizzard franchises once again at the Anaheim Hilton on November 1st.
This is the largest Blizzard community-built event, and it's made possible thanks to everyone who supports our Kickstarter campaign, which is now live at conbeforestorm.com.
Our initial funding goal is $13,500, and we're confident we can hit that goal with the community's help.
As always, we plan to include meet-and-greet opportunities with dozens of content creators, including artists, podcasters, Twitch streamers, esports personalities, and much more.
Returning fan favorites that are already confirmed for this year include badge artists Egg Dishes and Tepish, as well as the return of shirt and button designer Nadia Lee.
Finally, it wouldn't be Con Before the Storm without World of Podcasts, which will be celebrating its six-year anniversary.
However, our plans for World of Podcasts have grown, as have the costs to make it a reality, and we need your help to bring World of Podcasts back for its best year yet.
Get ready for a great night of podcasting content should we hit our stretch goal of $24,500.
To learn more about our plans, stretch goals, and backer rewards, go to conbeforestorm.com and follow at conbeforestorm on Twitter for ongoing updates. See you at BlizzCon!
It's the end of the show, and that means it's once again time for a weekly podcast roundup brought to you by the Realm Maintenance Podcast. The following is an insanely quick rundown of every podcast I'm aware of that covered a game from Blizzard Entertainment and produced an episode between May 14th and 20th of 2018. For General Blizzard Podcast, we have Three Goblins in a Trench Coat, All Things Azeroth, The Bard's Tavern, Battle.net News, Battle.net Sports, Battletag, Blizzard Umbrella, Blizzard Watch, A Blue Recluse, Epic Fail, Frozen Nerds, Hearthcast, Icy Veins, The Instance, Liking Balls, Nerf This, The Training Dummies, and Twisted Nether Blogcast. Your World of Warcraft shows include Allcraft, Azeroth Coast to Coast, Azeroth Roundtable, Battle Pets, Behind the Avatar, Best in Slot, The Converted, Countdown to Classic, Control Out Wild, Dark Moon Herald, Decoded for Azeroth, Frazzlecast, Girls Gone Wild, The Half-Hill Report, Hunting Party Podcast, Lion's Pride Tavern, The Lorecraft Podcast, or Watch Merely a Setback, Middle Finger Podcast, Pwncast, The Raiders Confessional, Starting Zone, Technically PvP, The Weekly Reset, The Worgen's Howl, WoW Challenges, WoW Pre-Show, WoW Talk, and WoWhead Weekly. Inside the Tavern for Hearthstone, we have 16 Hour Dusting Egg, Chicken Around the Hearth, Blizzard Hearthstone, Brewmasters, The Clock, Coin Concede, The Daring Reporter, Happy Hearthstone, Hearth Casual, Hearth Coach, Hearthzone Podcast, Hero Power Cast, Into the Wild, Last Turn, Lightforge, Legend of the Innkeeper, Off Curve, Omni Stone, Tier 5 Podcast, Top Deck Kings, UHL Rundown, Value Town, Velma's Chosen, Walk to Work, and Well Met. Shattered Soulstone produced a Diablo podcast this week, StarCraft had the Pylon Episode 6, Heroes of a Storm podcast include Core, Gankbush Squad, Heroes Forge, Into the Nexus, Lords of the Storm, Nexus Trolls, and Troll in HGC, and finally for Overwatch we have the Blackwatch Report, The Cavalry, Enter the Iris, Fragging Out, Heroes Never Die, High Noon, Instalock, Junkertown FM, Let's Break It Down, Low Team Damage, Omnic Lab, The Overview, Overwatch League Network, Owl Recap, and Watchpoint Radio. You can catch a weekly podcast roundup at the end of this show and during the Realm Maintenance podcast. For links to all these shows and more great Blizzard podcasts, go to realm-maintenance.com. You can find this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, or your podcast app of choice. You can follow the show on Twitter at RestartCast. Email the show at rollingrestartpodcast@gmail.com. The Rolling Restart is a presentation of Realm Maintenance Productions. You can find archives of this show at rollingrestart.frozenfoxmedia.com. The music for the show is Shaping of the World, originally by Jason Hayes from Blizzard Entertainment, and remixed by Pascal Michael Stifel. No copyright infringement is intended. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
This podcast is part of the Frozen Fox Media Network. Visit us at frozenfoxmedia.com for information about this and all the other content we offer. You can also find us on Twitter at Frozen Fox Media. Frozen Fox Media, cool content for the gaming community.